The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on June 4, 2006. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. It's good to see you all today. It was about 2 or 3 years ago now, I guess. I think most of you know I published a book called Buddhism Is Not What You Think. You know, after something like that comes out, and pretty soon you start getting letters, and it's interesting what people call it. I was delighted to see that a number of people picked up on the double entendre, the double meaning in the title. But every now and then, I was getting letters that would say, I read your book, Buddhism is not what you think it is, or Buddhism is not what it seems. With my first book, How the World Can Be the Way It Is, I suppose it's because there's so many words in the title. You really get some dandies there. How can the world possibly be like that? I would get letters like this. But in this particular case, with Buddhism is not what you think, getting quite a few people designating it as Buddhism is not what you think it is. And so I thought maybe I really should talk about this, because there is a double meaning in that title. And the more subtle one might be getting lost. I did mean, to some degree, Buddhism is not what you think it is. But also, it could be read as Buddhism is not about what you think. Without understanding that, I think the other definition, we don't get to the full impact of what Buddhism is and how we can approach it and understand it. I mean, first of all, if you say that Buddhism is not what you think it is, you might get the impression from that that, no, I'm going to tell you what it is. But I don't really do that. First of all, Buddhism isn't even Buddhism. So how can I tell you what it is? Buddhism is actually a kind of a misnomer. It was a name applied to it by Western scholars. The real term is Buddha Dharma, or the teaching of the awakened, what the awakened teach. But what the awakened teach is not, as my teacher would characterize it, it's not an ism. It is not a belief. It is not some concepts, some ideas. But of course, we being human beings, we're very much caught up in ideas and thinking. And so there we go. Right away we put all of our experiences into thought, into mental constructs. And in doing this, if we don't notice that Buddhism is there to point this out to us, to help us realize what we're doing, then we completely miss it. We completely miss it. And this is, I think, perhaps the more subtle meaning that's in that title. But in just looking at Buddhism is not what you think it is, looking at it in that way, whatever you think about Buddhism or the Buddha Dharma, the teaching of the awakened, I can assure you that that is not what this is about in the end. And people form all kinds of ideas about Buddhism. Even people who think of themselves as Buddhist, which is perhaps a very dangerous thing to do. We have ideas and notions that, Buddhism has certain beliefs and tenets that we must follow and hold to. There's beliefs like belief in reincarnation and belief in karma, belief in cause and effect. And we stick to a lot of these beliefs. We get caught up in this. And if we hold tightly to these things. Really, it's no different than anything else that we might take up. Because we all have our beliefs, opinions, thoughts, feelings, emotions. And for most of us, these things are very real, very definite, very graspable. And when we hold tightly to these things, they seem so real for us. But in holding tightly to them, we might not really look very carefully at what our experience is. Because we've already explained it to ourselves, we've already conceptualized it, and then we get kind of bound up in that, not noticing that maybe this doesn't really match what we actually experience. Maybe not noticing that, you know, not everybody thinks this way. We might notice that, but of course we can easily think, well, they're wrong. So we develop, say, religious intolerance or political intolerance. We develop intolerances of various kinds, prejudices, anger, difficulty. And if the Buddha Dharma were something like that, then of course it would just kind of fit right in there with so many other things. And now we can sit there and argue about, well, no, this is the right way, no, that's it. But the moment you take hold of something like that, that's not what this is. So that's why when I say that Buddhism is not what you think it is, I mean just that. Because whatever you think it is, whatever you think anything is, you should realize that you've now gotten hold of a limited view, a view that is separate, distinct, cut off from other. And in many cases, of course, this is going to put us in opposition with others. And it's just a source of difficulty and pain and sorrow. And through these means, we never really get to the bottom of anything. Unless we just put our blinders on and not notice that and just keep forging ahead with our thinking. And that's what most of us do, unfortunately. And in many cases, it doesn't really matter too much. But it matters enough that it embroils us in human difficulty, anger and sorrow and fighting. So the teaching of the awakened Buddha Dharma is not an ism. It is not something you can grasp. It is not an idea. It is not a belief. It is about drawing our attention to what our actual experience is, helping us to notice how we embroil ourselves in this kind of confusion and difficulty. That's the teaching of the awakened. That's what they point to. Were they to set up something there, some belief, some idea that you need to grasp, it would be no different than anything else. And so in that way, then I will tell you that if we understand deeply the teaching of the awakened, it is not like that. And it is not like that in this one unique way, that we can't grasp it. We can't get a hold of it. We get frustrated with that because we want, well, we're conceptual beings. We want to get the idea of something. We think that if we have the idea of something, then we know it. And if we're left without the idea of something, then we feel that we don't know it. But all the while, if we just pay attention to our experience in this moment, we know full well what is taking place and what is going on before we tell ourselves anything about it. But we don't pay any attention to that because we're so caught up with our thinking, with our believing, with our opinion. So in saying then that Buddhism is not what you think it is, I mean that whatever you think, that is not it. Whatever, as my teacher used to say, whatever you think, that's delusion. So whatever you think, that's delusion. Whatever you think is something torn out from the whole, is some separate thing that has other things counter to it, contradictory to it, things that you can't dismiss. These kinds of things, of course, are very useful. These are thoughts, ideas, beliefs, opinions. These things are very useful. but they are not truth. They are not reality. Truth, reality is something that you already experienced directly. It is a matter of getting acquainted with what that is. And it is in our holding to our notions, our ideas, our favorite beliefs, our prejudices, that we miss that. And of course, this is something very subtle because we hold on to our ideas very tightly and we grasp hold of our notions and ideas so quickly that we don't even really realize we've done this. We don't even realize that we're operating out of just models of reality that we've made in our mind that aren't actually reality. Very functional, useful, but when we confuse that with reality, and then particularly when we apply some moral value to it, we think, oh, this is the right way, this is what you should think, you're wrong, you're bad because you don't think like this, or whatever. It is just opening this grab bag of sorrow and pain. And there's no basis for it whatsoever. There's nothing that you can hold up there in your favored view that will remain, that cannot be torn asunder, brought down, and shown to be contradictory and out of step with reality. And this applies right across the board, even to Buddhist teachings. And that is why we have this built-in mechanism in Buddhist teaching, Buddha Dharma, where after the teaching is presented, we come along and dismantle it, erase it, take it down, so that we don't make the mistake of thinking that somehow we can get hold of it. Or, better yet, so that we might start to notice, because this is really what it comes down to, we might start to notice. You have to look at your own mind, your own heart, and realize what it is that you're clinging to there, that you're grasping there, beyond certain useful, provisional, helpful ways that might be useful for you. To continue with that as though this were ultimately true and real, this is pain, difficulty, and confusion. So Buddhism is not what you think it is. It's not what I think it is. I don't really think it is anything, actually. So I think it's pretty safe to say that. I want to say it now, too, just so people understand that I'm not saying whatever you think is wrong. Now I want to tell you that, because it's not that at all. I'm not going to tell you the real thing, because I can't. But nevertheless, for each one of us, we can see reality. We can see the real thing. We can wake up to it. But we can't really preach that to others or push that off on others. This is, once again, just how we bring in so much sorrow, pain, suffering into the human world. And it's easily done. We easily do this, and we don't realize what we're doing. So this other meaning, then, the more subtle meaning that's in that title, is Buddhism is not about what you think. So it's not about that. You're not going to find your way, open your eyes, realize truth, reality, by holding to an idea. So this isn't about getting the right idea, getting the right belief, the right opinion. It's not about that at all. So Buddhism is not what you think. The great Chinese Zen master Wang Po, he said that the wise reject what they think, not what they see, not what they experience directly. The foolish reject what they see, not what they think. So we're being fooled, we're foolish, if we just hang on to what we think, what we believe, the opinion that we have. Sometimes we'll hang on to these things right in the face of obvious contradiction, but out of fear, out of confusion, out of not knowing what else to do, finding some kind of false comfort, we'll hang on to these things. And not realizing the kind of pain and sorrow we're introducing, bringing into the world, just by that very act of hanging on to it. Thinking that the way I see it is the way it is, somehow connects us with something good and positive and wholesome. It doesn't. It connects us with division and conflict and sorrow and confusion. It is simply a matter of seeing that, seeing how it is. And it is just like that. How exactly? Can't really say. It is this dynamic thing, but it works just like this. The moment you grab hold of something thinking that this is it, it isn't what you think it is. And to the extent that you will hang on to it, you have just tied yourself to sorrow and confusion. So the teaching of the awakening is nothing more than to draw our attention to that. And whatever means are used, words are used, directions are used to get us to notice that, those things are all taken away then. Those words, those means by which we may open our own eyes to just see that. Because in seeing that, we don't need anything else really. All the provisional stuff, the ideas and thoughts and beliefs, opinions we might have about one thing or another. They're very useful. But they're limited. In seeing how it is that this is so, we spare ourselves a great deal of pain and sorrow. You know, too, like sometimes we might have an idea. Say we have an idea about peace. Peace is good, we think. You know, I would say it is. And we want to bring peace into the world. So now what are you going to do? You've just latched on to an idea. Peace is good and I want to bring it into the world. And so what, we're going to start a march for peace? We're going to protest for peace? What are we going to do for peace? Whatever you do for peace is to deny peace. Is to not understand peace. Peace is there if you stop. If you just stop, it's peaceful. Peace is the backdrop of the world, is the backdrop of reality. It's very peaceful overall. But we step into this peaceful world with some intention, some belief, some idea about straightening it up. Because we see others are confused in some way, but we don't recognize our own confusion. And that is the point here. Never mind how, yes, okay, they're confused, but look at you, you're confused. That is where you can work. So it is for each one of us to recognize and to wake up to our own confusion. And we wake up to this not by getting some idea about how it is that we're confused. We wake up to this by seeing directly how it is that the moment we grab hold of something and we're going to go marching forward with it, and it could be the most lofty, wonderful thing, but it knits us in with human pain and suffering. So this is not an easy thing to understand, because we keep wanting to grasp. So we want to grasp. We want to grasp the good. We want to grasp peace. We want to grasp wholeness. You know, it's said that in Zen, this expression, I've used it before, they say that, I don't know where this comes from, but they say that that we might think that the ultimate truth, say, is God, something like this. But they say that in Zen, they say the best way to worship God is to have no idea of God. Because the moment you grab hold of an idea, that's not it. If God, say, is reality, is the truth, is what is ultimately real, we should realize that the moment we pull it down into just some tiny fragmented little concept idea, that is not it. We should just know that right off, and we should also start to realize that you don't need to do that, because you already can see directly what is peace, what is wholeness, what is goodness. What we need to watch for is how we break that up, how we fracture it, how we divide it, how we set one thing. And whatever it is that we cling to in the process of doing that, that we might think is so good, if you can get hold of it as an idea or a concept of belief, you have to start to recognize how, in fact, that is causing a lot of conflict in the world. It's really very simple. The complications come with the fact that we are just so clinging, so grasping in our minds and in our hearts. But we have to, at some point, begin to acquaint ourselves with this and how we act, how we carry on. And then even as we approach a teaching like this, say, the Buddha Dharma, we approach it in the same way. We want to grasp it. We want to take hold of it. We want to get the idea of it. But this is a teaching that points out that you can't do that. Not if we're talking about truth, reality, goodness, wholeness, peace. You can't get hold of it, but you don't need to. That's the other part. And once we start to realize that we don't need to, that in fact, if we just stop, we already have this, so to speak, then we can stop causing a lot of trouble, both for ourselves and for the world. So basically then, this is what is in that title. Buddhism is not what you think. And I thought, in case this talk gets out there a little bit, it might help to alleviate some of the confusion, because I have noticed this. There's still some confusion here. And I don't want to perpetuate that confusion. But do you have any questions about anything I said here this morning? Yes, Lou.
What did the Buddha call his teachings?
Well, if he referred to them at all, it would have been just simply Buddha Dharma, I'm quite sure. Or Dharma. Dharma means teaching. Dharma also means truth, it means reality. Buddha, it just simply means Buddha is a person who realizes reality. And so Buddha Dharma, that means one who's awake to reality. And so Buddha Dharma then just simply means the teaching of the awakened, what the awakened teach. And in a nutshell, what they teach is found in the 183rd verse of the Dhammapada, which goes like this. This is the whole of it right here. Do what is wholesome. Avoid what is unwholesome. Purify your own mind. That's the teaching of the awakened. That's the 183rd verse. But you get the whole thing right there. So do what is wholesome. That is, just be aware of, the wholesome is already there. So you don't really need to do anything about it other than, it's mostly in the second part, avoid what is unwholesome. We get caught up in our ego, in our divisiveness, in our selfishness, in our wanting things to go a certain way, even if we might have very altruistic ideas. We have to be very careful of that. You have to see how you're handling, because if we slip into an unwholesome state of mind or a fractured state of mind, we see it in dualism, that's bad and I got to eradicate it or do away with it. That doesn't work very well. So what are you now? Good? Good isn't like that. Good isn't set apart from that thing over there that you're just labeled as bad. That's called the unwholesome, and we avoid that. Do what is wholesome. The wholesome already includes it. It includes everything. That's why it's called wholesome. I mean, it's whole. So we don't lose sight of this. So we act in such a way, you see the opposition over there, that those bad people. Don't sit there and just call them evil. You listen, you hear that they're calling you evil too, you see. It's all fractured. But if were we to have a larger view of this, we would realize that the good, the peaceful, is the whole. So we keep our mind tuned to that. We watch and to see how we slip off into our own egoistic, fractured kind of view of things. Our actions are just coming out of kind of I want things to go a certain way. Well, if we just simply want reality, in other words, want what this is, and now we can act in a way, well, we're not being divisive and cutting of the other, but in some way including the other. And in this way, maybe slowly, we can help the other see their confusion and come to the same wholeness. But this coming to the same wholeness, we don't get there by now taking some view, some belief, some, hey, you got to read this book, this is the good book, the holy book, the whatever. No, that's fracture, that will fracture the world. That will anger that, it will alienate that person. Well, we always approach it in that, but stop that. Just stop. And don't call yourself something particular, like a Buddhist. Now you've just set yourself, that's to act in an unwholesome way. You've just fractured the world. You've set yourself, now you're opposition. And what, now you're going to hold some particular view, you're going to push it on and show them how good this is and how wrong theirs is? No, we don't need to do that. You don't need to hang on to anything here. Just what people find most offensive and troubling and disturbing, and perhaps frightening, which conjures up more fear in people about the other, is that when we don't understand what they think. You know, we see them behaving, maybe you encounter somebody from a different culture, and they dress a little, well, maybe even a lot differently, but they dress differently. They have different customs, manners, they eat different kinds of foods and things. And we're a little uneasy. We might be. The more we're drawn into our fractured particularistic view, selfish view, separated view, ego view, it's going to be more of a threat, more of a problem. We'll be more fearful of that. And if you analyze and look at that fear or what's troubling you in your own mind, what it really comes down to, yes, superficially, yeah, you don't like the way they dress or the way they act, you know, and things like that. But what's really behind is that you don't know what they're thinking there. You don't know what they believe, what they think. Because, of course, it's coming out of their belief and out of their thought that they act in these different ways. their culture was born and created and developed. So in the end, that's what we're most frightened of, is what that other person thinks, because we don't understand their mind and how they think. But we don't really need to worry about this, because the same that is true for you, the same thing that heals you is this wholeness, is this totality, and we can open up to that. And the same is true of anyone else. But the moment you make it into something particular, you've just done the same thing all over again. You see what I'm saying? We can learn to do this where you don't frame something here. But just by even talking in this way, we're sort of framing something. It's true. But that's why I say that the Buddha Dharma is structured in such a way that eventually it just comes on. Whatever I say here, just remove that now. That's why you even have like Suzuki Roshi in teaching. He says, you don't need to remember what I say. You know, when my talk is through, your listening is through. Because it isn't about hanging on to any particular thing. What it is about, though, is to notice, to start paying attention to what you're doing, to what you're thinking, to what you're grasping, where that fear is coming up from, that anger, that confusion. And it's all bound up with this fracturing of the world. We hang on to all these things because we think they comfort us, that they will give us the answer, they will help us, but they don't. Not if we confuse them with something that's ultimately true. What is ultimately true is this wholeness, is this totality that we're all in. We have this kind of this common denominator, I guess maybe I could say, that we can all find. And that beautiful passage out here by Rumi, I believe, yeah, a Sufi. It says, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing. There is a field. I will meet you there. He understands this principle of wholeness. That is the good. That is the whole. And that's where we almost go. Well, we're already there, actually. We don't even need to go there. What we need to do is just simply to let go, beyond some provisional help momentarily that we might have about this idea or that notion or whatever. Just let it go. Let it go. Yes?
As an example, if you were to walk a path of peace or to walk a path of violence, what is the commonality that you see? Or if you were to walk a path of centrality and materialism or one of asceticism, what is the commonality as you see it?
With the commonality?
Yeah. What's the fullness there?
Well, you don't need to walk a path that has a label on it. You know, I'm walking the path of asceticism or I'm walking the path of materiality. Just walk and realize what you're doing. And you don't have to identify yourself as something. So I say I've written this too, but I say it often enough in different classes that I don't think of myself as a Buddhist. Even though I've studied this now for close to 40 years and I practice regularly most just about all that time. I've been ordained. I don't like that word. It's not really the right word. And I've studied in monasteries and things. But still, I don't think of myself as a Buddhist. I really don't. I'm not just saying that. And the reason I don't is because of what I've tried to talk about here today. It's not even that I don't do it for a reason. I don't even have any reason not to. It's just that the moment I form an idea like that, I immediately realize the suffering and the isolation and the separation from the other. And for what? What have I created here now that is so right, that has to be? Oh, I'm a Buddhist. Why do I need to form myself into some identity? What is taking place already before I make any idea of it at all. And to do this is, I am quite aware of it now, is to just bring pain into the world. Certainly into my life, but to the extent that I'm holding tightly to myself, I'm going to end up in conflict with others. And I don't mean that I never end up in conflict with others, today, now. That's not true. I do. But I'm watching that, and I realize where it's coming from, and I have to come back to myself and realize what I'm doing. This is the foundation and the basis for morality. It is a foundation and a basis for a peaceful world. But all of this is available to us right from the start, because we're already in it. We're already living in this world of wholeness and totality. It's a matter of us waking up to that and realizing what it is and noticing how we fracture ourselves and pull ourselves out of it. And how it just isn't really worth it. And after all these years, I'm slowly, finally beginning to realize that it just isn't worth it. That I have to make myself into something different or special. Moment by moment, in small ways, yeah, we are one thing or another. Right now, I suppose you could say I'm a teacher. I don't know if we have to, but because I'm teaching, or at least I'm talking, I'm a speaker at least. In a little while, pretty soon, most of us will become pedestrians. But we don't have to freeze on to that, If you go to your office tomorrow and you sit at your desk and somebody comes in and you say, "Well, I'm a pedestrian, by the way. Pedestrian here, put a little sign." It's ridiculous. But we'll do that. We'll think of ourselves in some particular way. And we'll move through life in all different capacities here and there, all the while thinking that we're some particular way when, in fact, we're not any particular way. And by freezing ourselves and holding to ourselves and forming an identity, we set ourselves up to be offended. We set ourselves up to maybe feel proud. We set ourselves up for all kinds of difficulty. We certainly have set ourselves up to enter into conflict with others who might see that in a totally different way, depending on what particular category we've momentarily have framed ourselves in. It's just really a matter of just recognizing what we're doing. Because basically we're kind of going around through life insane, thinking that there's real definite and solid things here about us and about our world and about our life and everything, when in fact there isn't. We live in a dynamic reality that in fact is our actual life, is this dynamism, this nonstop change. The moment we hold something in a particular identity, a particular form, particular belief, it could be any number, anything, ourselves or something else, anything at all. It's in violation of what is actually taking place. Temporarily, provisionally, yeah, these little things are useful, helpful, but then let them go. To the extent that we hang on to things, we don't notice what's happening. We shut ourselves off from waking up to the vibrant reality that is taking place, that is coming up in each moment. Because we're locked onto a frozen idea about how things are, how they ought to be. So that's why this is also called freedom, this awakening. The Buddha spoke of this liberation. This awakening is equated with that. Liberation of mind. Our mind becomes free. So often too, we feel kind of terrified that when talking this way, it sounds like the death of the ego, like I'm going to disappear, or I won't be able to hold myself together as something. Well, if in reality, if you aren't anything in particular in the first place, what are you fearful of? Something can't fall apart that was never formed in the first place. These things are only formed in your mind, in my mind, in everybody. You know, as we think, we form things. But that's a continuous flux all the time. That's just coming and going. We can experience that directly. Realize what that means in terms of your life, the actual life you're living, not the life that you think you're living. Buddhism is not about what you think. It's about getting us acquainted with what's actually taking place. And yet still, we can, contrary to what we might think, everything falls apart and everything's a big blur. Well, that's not true. You know, I managed to find my way here. I can look at the clock and understand that. Use these things provisionally. But I don't have to think that it's absolutely some particular time or place. But the circumstance will bring about this moment and just be there, present with it. Maybe you can anticipate some things that might be coming along. Well, yeah, that, if you're present with it, you will. But it is really a matter of just being here and then letting it go when it's time to let it go. I think there was a question here. Yeah. Yes.
I'm just wondering, is there a way to be mindful about being involved in some sort of social, I don't want to say movement, but I think there are clearly times when not acting or saying something is immoral.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I guess is it just that you have to be careful about what group you're going to join and how you're going to talk about things, or?
Well, I think you should be careful about that, but we will always be surrounded by delusional thought, you know, and behavior. But of course, you should be, you know, careful of such things. But this isn't a matter of, you know, so often, I don't know how this happens. Maybe it's just the poor way that I present this, but people get the impression then that I'm talking about non-action. Or not doing something, not standing up and saying something. But I'm not saying that at all. I'm talking about being present in the world, present right here, and there might be times when there's some action to be taken. But if we are not bound to some particular abstract view of one thing or another, but present in reality, and you can see what's fracturing out there, you can act now and speak in a way that might help to, you know, kind of minimize that confusion and that fracturing and that difficulty. That's all I'm saying. The classic example is that time, I've told this story before, the fellow on the bus. I think this really, really sums it up. There's a story of a young man gets on a bus. I think it was an American. He was in Aikido, some kind of martial art thing, and he was getting pretty good at it, right? He's on a bus. It was in Japan. And this very dirty, disheveled, profane fellow gets on. He's very belligerent, and he's swearing at people and pushing them around and all that sort of thing, and on this bus or whatever. And people on the bus are getting very, very uneasy, you know, having this guy there. And so he's about ready now to go in there and just kind of, you know, take him out, you know, this young man, the Aikido guy. And, well, just at the moment he's about to make his move, and all of a sudden you hear this loud, "Hey!" You know, there's some little old guy just sitting there on the bus. He's got a seat next to him, and he's just beaming and looking at the profane fellow. And says, "Hey, come here. You know, he invites him over and has him sit down next to him. Pretty soon they're talking. And he's telling about, you know, the old man's telling about, you know, his wife and, you know, and how they like to keep flowers and that sort of thing. And pretty soon this big guy, he starts crying. He says, "You know, I ain't got no wife, and I love flowers too." And they're just talking, they're relating one human being to another. And in no time, that entire bus, the whole atmosphere, everything had changed. One moment, everybody wanted him off the bus, get him out of here. That's to approach it in some way where we got to confront it. He's wrong, he's bad, let's do something about that. And so the old man, I'm not talking about inaction, because the old man took action. But it's a radically different kind of action. He was coming out of wholeness. He didn't kick out the guy. He embraced him. And the young man, the Aikido guy, he said he really learned a lesson that day. When his stop came up, then he was getting off the bus, and the last thing he saw was the old man had this guy. He was all dirty, his dirty matted hair. He was resting on the old man's shoulder, and the old man was just kind of stroking his head. It's a totally different scene. That's the thing to remember. We're only talking about this difference between fracturing the world and seeing it in a fractured way, in an oppositional way, a dualistic way, or seeing it in terms of wholeness and coming out of that and learning to find the wholeness. Yeah, so we're not talking about inactivity. And this has to be understood. Yes?
This comes to the question. When all of us walk out of this room, every brain leaves there. What is left here? You didn't hear the question?
I heard your question, but there was some comments.
He said, "Want to stick around and see?"
Well, there you go. I couldn't do better than that. It's kind of like that tree in the forest, right? Yeah. Which, by the way, I actually heard. Yeah, it was one time I was hiking on Isle Royale, way back, and you know, hadn't seen anybody all day hiking along. Finally, a ranger came along the other way. We were standing there just talking a little bit. I hadn't seen anybody all day on this long trail. And we're standing there talking, and then a ways off in the woods, all of a sudden we heard a tree fall over. And the ranger said to me, he said, "That's the tree that falls over when there's nobody here to hear it. That was it." And it does make a sound, so. Well, that's probably it. I think we've gone over, so I'd better end it. But thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.